When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, you podcast listeners that care about independent music. You've come to the right place. If this is your first time here, welcome. I've got 500 some odd episodes you can dive back into. These are all really focused conversations about the origin stories of people who are involved and impacted by independent music and punk and hardcore and indie rock and emo, as long as it emanates from small, sweaty rooms. That's exactly what we are doing here. And of course, today is no exception because I am obsessed with both of this person's bands. Her name is Jess Nix. She sings for a band called Mortality Rate. She also sings for a band called World of Pleasure. I love both of these bands. I punished her on Instagram to be able to come on the show because I was like, man, I just love your bands and I just want to talk to you. I want to know about the Calgary hardcore scene. I want to know about the origin stories of you as a human. And she was kind enough to accept the invitation because she was, you know, admittedly being like, I don't really do podcasts that much. I've done maybe one or two. I don't maybe like to put too much of myself out there. I'm like, I totally get that. We can, you know, cut anything that you desire. She listened to it and was like, actually, you know what? Like, this is cool. Let's run with it. So I'm incredibly excited to bring you this conversation because I think it will help you understand, you know, maybe a side of the punk and hardcore scene up in Canada that you might not have reckoned with, which, you know, many people from a North American perspective just focus on the States. And clearly there's a lot of other things going on to our neighbors in the North. Let's talk about how you can support the show. For one, you can share this episode or any episode in particular on social media. That's just the best way to do it. You know, friends recommending things to get into, that like it's a tried and true method. So please share this on social media as you see fit. You can also email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I know for those of you that listen to this show on a week and week out basis, you hear me say a lot of the same things. And I apologize, but you know, some people don't listen every single episode. And you know, hopefully you get that. And you can also leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And please do the same on Spotify. You can just leave a rating, and that would be super, super helpful because the algorithm, the great algorithm that all of us, you know, bow at the feet of, you know, this podcast is no exception to that rule. So whenever you are able to, please do that. It takes like 30 seconds of your time and you can probably do it while you're listening to the show. So I love Jess's bands. I think they do an incredibly fun thing with metalcore where it's like they, you know, they're not reinventing any wheels, but what they do so well is making sure the message comes across, the personal expression that is contained behind it. And ultimately, you feel like both of her bands are fun, differing levels of fun, like where Mortality Rate is a little more, you know, serious, for lack of a better term, whereas World of Pleasure is a celebration of vegan, straight edge metalcore and, you know, having fun with friends and all that sort of stuff. But I love both of her bands. So I was like, let's go, Jess. Let's do this. Let's have fun. But before we dive into that, I have to promote a friend's band called Knelt Before. I will toss a link in the show notes of this very show so you can check out what they have. My friend Mark, who he's an old hardcore dude, doing this band, putting the vibe out there. If you like, you know, H2O, Madball, that sort of stuff, it's got a lot of melodic overtones as well. I highly suggest that you check it out because, they are just all about the positivity and being a person who tries to remain positive as well. I couldn't help but, give some friends a shout out. Most specifically, my friend Mark. So listen to Knelt Before. You can check it out in the show notes. A link will be there. And then, you can check it out on Bandcamp. It's great. So let's talk to Jess Nix from World of Pleasure and Mortality Rate. Here you go. I had been familiar with Mortality Rate, and then knowing about once World of Pleasure popped into my sort of ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things, like, I enjoyed Mortality Rate, and then mm-hmm. I enjoyed World of Pleasure. And then once I put everything together in regards, I mean, I knew that you obviously sang for both bands, but it was, I just then all of a sudden, and I'm sure you feel this too, where like a switch flips. Where it's like, oh, so like now I'm obsessed with this band.
Yeah.
and now I'm just like, okay, like I'll relate this back to like I got obsessed with Foundation. And yeah. It's just like certain bands that all of a sudden just like tick a lot of boxes for you, whether it's musically, lyrically, you know, it's like, oh, Vegan Straight Edge, of course. Like I'm already in the bag for that. and so I'm sure it's interesting for you, especially because Mortality Rate has existed for, you know, quite some time, for people to find out about you via another band and then see that you sing for another band. Is that interesting, you kind of hearing about people's entry points to, you know, the art that you put out there?
I've actually, like, I try to kind of avoid anything like people talking about me, so I don't go looking for it. But I've had some people send me screenshots of just being like, oh my God, people are talking about World of Pleasure on Reddit or something. And it's usually people being like, someone will mention Mortality Rate and then someone will reply to it being like, have you heard World of Pleasure? Like so far, it's at least as far as my understanding goes, most people know about it because of Mortality Rate. I have had a couple people though say that they didn't realize it was me singing in both. Like they heard someone show them World of Pleasure and they were like, oh, this is really cool. And they like it. And then they just like one day saw me post about it and are like, wait,
hold the phone.
Yeah. Hold on. And I'm like, I mean, I do like this because I do love seeing people not be like, all girls sound the same, but like, also like, I'm a one trick pony. I sound the exact same on both. So it's just funny to me when I'm like, you didn't realize that was me.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything different.
I think that just because it's like different variations of the same flavor, I guess, you know, it's like Mortality Rate, like there's clearly more going on in regards to the sonics of it. Same thing could be said about World of Pleasure. It's like, it's just a, you know, different flavor of vanilla. And I don't mean to use vanilla as a bad comparison, but
that's,
you know,
my
what I'm saying.
Flavor. I get you. Yeah. I do also, like, I'm not good at it because I don't know what I'm doing, but I try to approach writing for them differently. Like for Mortality Rate, I follow the drums. And then for World of Pleasure, I try to follow like the guitar pattern more. And I like make an effort to try to, I kind of have like a, what's the word? System, a pattern. I have a formula for Mortality Rate of like where I come in and what parts I don't sing on and stuff like that. And I'm really vocal heavy on it because all the bands that I really love are very vocal heavy. And I try to not repeat stuff too for Mortality Rate. So for World of Pleasure, I'm like, okay, band name in every single song, like recycle lines from other songs, like try to repeat things a little bit. And then, yeah, I try to go a little vocal heavy on it, or like I'll stress out. I'm like, I can't finish this song and we're recording soon. And I'm like panicking. And Coulter's like, okay, just don't sing on that part. And I'm like, wait, what? You mean you don't have to sing from start to finish for every song? And he's like, yeah, no, you can just let the riff do its job. And I'm like, interesting. Okay. Never thought about it that way. So right. I try to change up like the approach a little bit, but my delivery, exact same. I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. There's no technique. That's the only thing I can do. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's especially too, because that idea of your truest expression, it's like, yes, over time you do understand how you can quote unquote scream better, you know, where it's like, yes, okay, I'm not going to blow my voice out in like 4 seconds, but the notes and like who you are really comes out, not only, you know, because this is like literally your second band, but it's just the consistency is there. And I think that's what makes it probably fun for you to be like, oh, this is how I can make it different, because I know I can't make it different in my screaming.
Yeah, I can't change my voice, so I'm gonna do something like that's not the exact same. Also, you know, the lyrical content also not very serious.
Yep.
Whereas mortality rate is sad.
Yes,
for the most part. So, yeah. Right.
Yes, it's very, very focused in the emotional approach, as it were.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'll pull the threads on both those bands in a minute, but I want to dive into you as a human being, Jess, because that's obviously why we're here. I know you were born and raised in Whistler, which is a ski resort town, and that is a weird place to grow up, just because. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the same way that when you speak to people who are born in Hawaii, it's like, what do you mean you were born in Hawaii? Like, and you
No one's born there. Yeah.
Right. Like, you take vacations there. And so I'm sure the transitory nature of that town had to have rubbed off on you in regards to the sort of feast and famine nature of the city from a tourism perspective. Or am I misrepresenting where it always seemed like there was a tourist element, even if there wasn't skiing?
Whistler's a weird town to grow up in. I don't go outside. So I was always trying to escape it. And like my like coping mechanism to being sad has always been like, okay, leave. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why touring became so appealing to me, even though I love living in Calgary. My brain isn't wired to feel happy. So whenever I get like extra sad or whatever, like the instinct is always just go somewhere else. So touring became like a really, really good escape for just, yeah, that instinct of just like, oh, I don't like it here, or I'm sad. So instead of like dealing with that, I'm just going to go somewhere else and pretend that all the things that make me sad don't exist.
Totally. Yeah.
Hopefully that answers your question.
we'll be able to dig more into that. I guess the Whistler aspect, because from what I've only been there once, but it definitely feels like a town that, not only is rooted in tourism, but then it does feel working class. I mean, I don't want to represent it like that, like paint it with too broad of a brush, but it definitely seems like there are the service industries, as it were, to facilitate all of the tourism that exists there.
Yes.
Did you feel, did you, not like you would have been able to describe that as a child, but like, did you feel that?
Whistler is either you live there because you want to be there, or your parents want to be there, so you're forced to live there, me.
Right.
Or you're rich. So if you're one of the first two, you have to work your ass off in order to literally live. Like, just like it's much more than a, like, paycheck to paycheck lifestyle there. If you aren't rich, if you're living there because that's where you want to be or where you have to be, like, it's not a paycheck. It's like a working 4 jobs all the time to just survive kind of thing. And I moved out when I was 18. So like, I didn't really have to do that part, but I moved out because, my mom needed help with rent and I wasn't making enough money to do so. So I was like, okay, let's get a person living with you that can justify paying that much money to live here. And I'll go live somewhere where I actually want to be and like feel good about paying money to be there. Cause I didn't want to be in Whistler. So I didn't want to have to like struggle to survive. And like all the money I had, I would use to pay for gas to go to Vancouver so I could go to shows and hang out with people. Yeah. Right. So I could like hang out with people that listen to hardcore and stuff. I had friends. I had like 3 of them, five, but like some had already moved away. They all were active and stuff. And we had all just graduated high school. So some were going to college, yada, yada. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to just sit around and pay all of my money to be somewhere I don't want to be and not be able to go have fun. But I definitely both of my parents are very hardworking because it's where they wanted to be. So all I know is like grind.
Yeah.
Like all I did was watch my parents grind, like working class. Like, as far as I know, that's all that exists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like the connection that you made there in regards to the idea that, I mean, people that work hard because they want to be located where they're at, like that's what people do a majority of the time. Anybody that lives in New York or San Francisco or anything.
Yeah.
But you, I mean, as a kid, once you start, your world started to open up a little bit, it was like, oh yeah, I don't want to be here. So I'm going to get out of here. And that, just that idea.
Yeah, I was trying to forever. I had a bunch of friends on Vancouver Island because, did you ever go to Van Alfest? I'm assuming you know what that is.
I've heard of it. I never went, nor was I that familiar with like the lineups and like how that's got all put together in the first place.
It was kind of like a Wild Rose level, okay, up until this year. But it was just like really fun. And yeah, I had like friends in Vancouver and friends in Victoria that like were into hardcore and stuff and metalcore. Those were the same thing to me. We make that very clear. I didn't have a lot of exposure to it. So basically if you had like mosh parts, you were a hardcore band to me.
Yeah. Interchangeable. Right.
Yes. Yes. But the school in Victoria is really awesome. So like I found out they had like a photography program and I was like, oh my God. And like metalworking and stuff. And I was like, oh, I want to go learn how to do cool things. We didn't have band program in my high school after I was in grade 8. And we didn't have any languages aside from French. And the art program was every grade in one room. So like, I wanted to leave to a place where I would be happy. And so my excuse was like, oh, the school there is really good. Like, you should let me go to school there and like work and live with a friend. Cause I was already working just so I could afford to have fun. So I was like, you should let me go live with a friend for cheap and go to a cool school where I'm like happy and stuff. And I'm happy to like be busy all the time working so I can live that life kind of thing. But I mean, now I understand that I'm my mom's best friend. And she was like, nope, you're not leaving my house yet. And I was like, okay.
Right. So, right. Right.
Yeah.
And the family structure growing up, I mean, it seems like your mom was the most consistent and I guess closest that you were in your family. Do you have brothers or sisters? What did the structure look like?
It's just me.
Just you, only child.
Yep. Yep. Only child. And my parents split up when I was 7. So, and my dad's a helicopter pilot, so he was gone a lot. Now he just works in the summers for the most part. But from what I remember, I also don't remember a lot of my childhood, but from what I remember, he worked year round at that point. So his contract would be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. But if there's a forest fire that isn't going away, he can't just leave. So sometimes he'd be gone for like 2 months at a time or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me and my mom were homies. She's my best friend. So yeah, it was mostly just me and her, and she worked really hard to be able to stay where she wanted to be and also like give me a house and stuff, you know?
Yeah, give you the stability, especially, I mean, I recognize, just observing you from a distance, the fact that you say you're an only child, I'm like, oh, I recognize that because I myself am an only child. So mm-hmm. There's a certain energy that we put out in the world, good or bad. It's just that notion of
the main character syndrome.
For sure. Like, absolutely, yep. absolutely pay attention to me, but then also, please leave me alone. Like,
Yeah. Look what I did. Oh no, now you're looking, look away. I don't like this. Yeah.
don't look too close or too long. Just check it out.
Yeah. Acknowledge it, move on though. Right. Yeah.
and you have also struck me as a person that talking about all of those, you know, kind of polar opposite feelings that you feel. Was that something like, you know, were you an outgoing kid? Were you more of an introvert? Like, where did you kind of place yourself on that spectrum as you started to, you know, go into like junior high and high school when you were actually had an identity?
So, we didn't realize until a couple, maybe last year, or the year before, we didn't realize that I am a little bit on the spectrum.
Sure.
So, I was both. I thought of myself as outgoing. But I didn't have friends until I was maybe grade 4. So like 10.
Okay.
I had friends, but like I would have like a friend And I think it was like a sympathy thing. Like they were just like, she's weird and doesn't have friends. So they would like hang out with me sometimes, but like no one really stuck around. And then I got this like core group of friends when I was like 10, and I'm still friends with all of them. I say that we don't talk for like 3 years, but then when we do, it's like nothing has changed, you know? And then I got that core group of friends, and then I was chilling all the time. Like I could not be alone. And I think now that I understand like kind of how my brain works, I think that like I needed to be kind of overstimulated all the time. Otherwise I'd crash, because I did, but I didn't know how to like recharge. Like I didn't know that I could like spend time alone and be okay. And that I was just kind of distracting myself from like being depressed by hanging out with people all the time. I'm sure you heard it in another thing. I'm straight edge for a reason. So I started just partying a lot when I was a teenager. Nothing crazy. I just really liked drinking. It was a lot of fun for me, and it was like, it made my anxiety go away. So I think I was an introvert. I am now very much. I don't leave my house unless I have to. And I think that I always have been, but I just didn't know that. And I thought that like the burnout from socializing was just like the feeling of being alone. I didn't realize that I could just spend more time alone and then feel better. So I was just like always chilling with people all the time. And then I went to Europe when I was 21, I think, by myself for 3 weeks. And this was like before Canadian phone plans like worked outside of Canada. So I had no phone. I only had my phone on Wi-Fi, and I hung out by myself and like got around all these cities where not many people spoke the same language as me, and I was fine and I did it. And then I came home from that and kind of was like, oh, I'm fine by myself. That felt really good. Like I gained a lot of confidence and I feel rested for the first time in my life. And that kind of like switched my perspective. So I have the capability to be really good with people. I just don't like it. So if I need the switch to be on, it can be on, but I prefer to be by myself.
Right. That, and I do think that feeling of what you're talking about, especially, you know, as you're socializing in school and understanding so many different things that are not directly about you, but just seeing how the world operates. And then that idea of turning yourself on and off, that, you know, that doesn't become apparent until you're much, much older. And so, yeah, that feeling of what you're talking about, I'm so tired. Like I've put myself out there so much, but then you didn't have any emotional tools or physical tools to be able to recharge yourself because you were, you know, a child essentially.
Yeah. And like, as far as I knew, that's just how people felt, you know, like I didn't know that you, people could like read a page and then tell you what they read. I thought that you had to read a page 5 times in order to understand it. Like, I didn't know that people didn't have crippling anxiety and panic attacks when they were introduced with a new task around people. Like, I didn't know, that people don't get brain fog. Like, I didn't know that I had anxiety. I thought that I felt normal. And then like, as I get older, like there's still new things that I find out about myself all the time. Cause I'm talking to someone and they're like, oh yeah, you know, like my doctor told me this, or my therapist told me this, or like, I'm struggling with this right now, and this is the reason why. And I'm like, oh, I do. Wait, is that not normal? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, something's wrong with me. I do the same thing. Yeah. And they're like, yes. And I'm, oh, okay. Because that also just like, wasn't really talked about when we were younger. Like it was just, you know, that's a weird kid, you know. Yep. Like the kid that's having a panic attack, they're just weird, they're sensitive. Or it was never like a, maybe there's something not okay happening, like maybe something's not connecting right, we should figure this out. It was just like, oh, there's just like over, like that's an only child, she's being over dramatic,
right? We should look under the hood of this rather than just like the painting with the broad brush of just like, oh yeah. Yes, they're trying to get attention, you know. It's like, yeah.
And not always. My mom is the greatest person on this planet and loves me so much. So if I was ever a situation, like there was just so many things that justice doesn't do that because she knew it was going to make me anxious. Yep. Or like make me upset. So instead of, cause you know, so many people are like, oh, they just got to cry it out. Or like, oh, they've just got to suck it up. My mom never, ever made me suck it up, ever. It was like, that makes you uncomfortable, you don't have to do it, which is amazing. But she also just like, she didn't realize that maybe there was something like up.
Yeah.
You know? She was just right. Like, oh, you're just, this is just how you are. And that's fine. And she made me so safe and so comfortable, and she did a very good job.
Right. She gave you the space, but then, yeah, she didn't know what to do beyond that to help you even further. So that totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't figure out until later.
Right. Yeah. Once all the other things start to happen, and which we'll talk about in a moment, but I know you have described in a few different locations in regards to your first exposure to music at large, in regards to, you know, going to a concert, that sort of stuff, was seeing The Offspring as your very first show when you were
seven.
Quite young. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, I mean, you know, that's a beautiful experience for someone who doesn't know probably what a lot of the words mean that they're singing. you're just reacting off of the visceral nature of what Offspring was at that particular time. And I know that you had mentioned where it's like, you know, literally passing out as you were, going to the show or anything like that. Was it mostly just, I guess, the energy that attracted you to music in general, or what kind of spoke to you? Not like you could really dig into your brain as 7 years old, but what spoke to you about that that level of interaction that you saw with that sort of music?
It must have been the energy. I'm like, I don't even know. I just heard it and liked it. Like, my dad, actually recently, I was visiting. He lives out by Kelowna, and that's where I record. So after I recorded the vocals for Rosemary, I stayed at his house and I was playing it. And I don't think he'd like told his new girlfriend that what my music is like. So she was sitting there just kind of like, oh, okay, this is a lot to take in. And I was like, I probably should have warned you. It's not easy listening. And she kind of looked at my dad, and my dad was like, I don't know why she's like this. He was like, both my parents really like Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. And he said that ever since I was like in a car seat when I was a little baby, like they'd be listening to softer music and I'd be passed out, and then guitar music would come on and I'd like wake up and perk up and like bob my head. Like I just connected in my brain, and I don't really know why.
Listen, I love to be a walking billboard for bands. And why shouldn't you? Band merch is the life's blood. I don't care what size of band you are, from your, you know, mom and pop local garage band all the way up to bands like Metallica and Pantera. And the reason I mention them is because rockabilia.com is the place where you can buy all of your officially licensed band merch. And they will give you a discount, a 10% discount, if you use this promo code 100 words or less. Please use that. It lets them know that marketing works and you get a discount. Everybody wins in this scenario. Rockabilia ships from the Midwest to you very quick. And like I mentioned, bands like Metallica, Pantera, Pink Floyd, Ramones, Rolling Stones, I don't care what you're into, you're probably going to find something for you, find something for your mom or dad or brother or sister or friends. And we're getting close. Shopping season is upon us for the holidays. So dive into rockabilia.com, use the promo code 100 words or less, 10% off your entire order, and buy the things that you need to buy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ray.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
And I know that as you started to, you know, grow up and you've affectionately, and I think most people that are, you know, of the era in which, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, when social networks started to exist and the proliferation of music on the internet started to happen, that's where you started to be able to understand what these, you know, genres of music were. You're getting exposed to, like, you know, My Chemical Romance, Used, and all that sort of stuff. And it seems to me, based on your previous descriptions, like you dove into that music hard and you were just trying to consume as much of it as you possibly could. Is that
correct? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm still there. I'm a scene kid for life.
Good. Good to hear.
Yes. Yeah. I never thought I was too cool for that shit. I love it so much. But I definitely, I don't know. I also have like multiple jobs and two bands and cats and try to like be a good friend to my people. So I can't spend like 5 hours at a time just like going through music blogs anymore. But I used to spend like the second I got home from school until like 2 a.m, I would just sit on my computer and like download stuff on LimeWire. I'd be on, what was the website called? It was like Pure Volume or Pure something, or
Pure Volume was a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I would just sit there and like click on related artists for hours listen to a couple songs. Like that's how I found like See You Next Tuesday and sure. Texas in July and like bands like that. I would just click on related artists, listen to a couple songs. If I liked it, I'd go to LimeWire and I'd download every single thing I could find.
Yeah.
And
there's also last.fm, and that was like, it would track you, if you plugged it into your, you know, Apple iTunes, it was able to track the music that you played and then recommend, if you went to the website, it recommended other artists. So I know it was around that same time as Pure Volume. So that's mm-hmm. amazing though.
Yeah, I would, that's all I cared about. That's all I did.
And as you were getting into this, you know, arguably weird stuff for your parents to understand, especially, you know, because you were spending most of your time with your mom, was she concerned about the sort of music? Because I'm sure you were, you know, expressing yourself maybe visually as well with some interesting haircuts or interesting hair colors. How was she reacting to all that stuff happening?
She let me do whatever I wanted.
That's great.
If she was concerned, I am unaware of it.
Right.
Like, she's... I can't say enough good things about my mom. The only thing she didn't want me to do was get tattooed before I turned 18. And I did when I was like 17 and a half. I was like, hey, I didn't get ID'd, so I'm going to get tattooed. And she was like, eh, it's 6 months away. Fuck it. Like,
right. We've lasted this long. Yeah.
Yeah. She was like, okay, I have come to terms with the fact that this is something I just need to accept about you. Cause before she was like, no way in hell. And now, whenever I meet one of her friends that like, they've only heard about me, they don't know me yet, she basically tells me to strip naked. She's like, look at all of her art. It's so cool. And she like rants and raves. She got this one in this city and this one's me and this one's her cat. And yeah, she like gets so excited about it. And when before she was just like, no, not allowed. So I think she's always kind of just done her best to accept me for what I am, no matter how weird it was or how much she didn't understand it. And she also made a point to be very involved. Like she knew all of my friends, even if she didn't meet them because they lived in Vancouver and they like weren't able to come hang out in Whistler or something. Like she would pay attention to when I was talking about them. So she had a base understanding of the people that I was with. So then I think that made her feel more comfortable that like my kids going out to the city to hang out with strangers, you know, like, mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. She never seemed concerned.
No, that's incredible. Especially too, with the idea, like you said, I think most parents, they won't understand the music, especially when they bring stuff home that is not in context for anything that they are aware of. But then once you take the additional step of, like you said, going to hang out with strangers at shows and just be like, huh? Like, okay. But I mean, it's great that your mom gave you that much, you know, latitude to be able to explore, obviously, what you ended up becoming obsessed with.
Yeah. Yeah. She's she's great now. Also, like, she, you know, she, the music was never for her. She never really enjoyed it being on in the car. I would just have my headphones in. I think maybe she might be listening to this going, no, you blasted that shit. I hated it. Right. But, she was very tolerant of it. But now, like, with my bands, she makes every single person she meets listen to them.
It's beautiful.
She's so cute. She is so amazing. I love her so much. Yeah. She punishes every person that she meets. Being like, this is my daughter's band. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, she's the best. She has pictures of her playing in Europe. Like, she's so cute.
Totally. That's great. Biggest fan in the corner. That's awesome.
Yep. Yep.
And as you were going into, you know, high school and all of this music stuff was happening around you, did you care about school? I mean, I know, like, you were talking about prior to this in regards to, you know, your drinking and sampling that side of life. Were you able to keep up with grades, or was that never something you were interested in?
I've got crazy ADHD. So, things I liked, I did great in, and things that I didn't understand, I didn't care at all. I didn't graduate high school, but, I'm a very petty and stubborn person. And it was, I was sticking it to someone who, the vice principal, who said something that made me mad. I decided I'm not going to graduate to spite you guys. So I have one outstanding class from high school that I didn't do.
that's incredible. I like how you're like, you know what? I am going to damage myself, but at the same time, I'm proving a point to you, so I win.
Yeah, they were concerned about my. They just noticed that I wasn't doing this one class because I had to be self-taught, and I can't do that.
Uh huh.
Because my brain doesn't work that way.
Sure.
So I just didn't care. I wasn't doing it. And then it was like the last semester of grade 12 and the vice principal was like, hey, so we realized that you're not doing this. And I was like, yep. And she was like, we're really worried about you. And I was like, oh, I'm fine. I just can't teach myself how to do something. So I'm not going to, but I also failed the other, it's a science credit. So I was like, I started failing the one science credit, and the other science credit has a chapter about arachnids in it, and I'm arachnophobic. And I asked if I could skip that chapter and do something else. And the teacher said, no, so I'm not doing it. And she was like, okay, like tried to kind of like give me like a, well, it's kind of just for your own good. And then she was like, but also when people don't graduate, we get less money. And I was like, you're concerned about the money, not me. Fuck you. I'm not graduating. Right. So I finished the rest of my courses, but not that one.
Nice. I like the stubbornness of that, because again, it's proving a point. You're just like, well, yeah, you're doing this. I'm going to do this to spite you.
Yes. I'm brutal. I know it's not a good character trait, but I also don't care to fix it.
Got it.
I loved literature, like English, and then like English lit and stuff like that. And I finished all the extracurricular English courses you could take and everything for grade 12 too. I finished it all by the first half of grade 11. Like, I just did them all. And I think I was like a B student for other subjects. But I failed a math class, and it was, again, a stubborn thing. I like was in England with my dad during the chapter where they teach you how to graph, like sine and cosine and all that crap. But I was good at math. Like, up until then, I was very good at it. So when I came home, the teacher just gave me like finished notes. She would like walk you through the steps on a board, on a projector. So you'd watch her do it. But the end of the notes is just a finished sheet with no steps on it. And she just gave me that, being like, here, you're good at math. You can figure it out. And I was like, no, I need you to teach it to me. Like, can we do like an after school tutor session? So you just need to explain it to me and I'll get it. And she was like, no, you can just do it. So I was like, okay, you won't teach me? You can't teach me then. And I would just have my headphones in and read my books during her class. And I failed on purpose.
Right.
And then I did dumb people math. And our dumb people math teacher was a disaster. She should not have been teaching students. I learned how to change a tire in that class.
You were doing some real practical applications of math.
Yeah, she taught us a lot of life skills, not a whole lot about, like, you're supposed to, I think, learn how to do your taxes in that class. I don't think we learned that. I learned how to change a tire, though.
That's good.
It was really good, yeah.
Yeah, at least you learned something out of that. So was there any life plan, so to speak, in regards to career, like stuff you wanted to do, whether or not you knew you could like make money off of it? Was there a vision of yours to be like, that would be cool if I did this? Or was it all just kind of shooting from your hip?
No, it's all just been kind of like, figure it out. That's why I didn't really care about graduating, because I had no interest in paying thousands and thousands of dollars to go to college for something I know I'm not going to use. Like, I didn't feel the need to waste my time and money on a degree that I'm probably not going to use. And I also didn't have any ideas of what I wanted. Like, there was no like, this might seem interesting. Maybe I'll try to. The only thing I wanted to do was study English more and writing more. But like, just to learn about it, I wasn't like, I want to be a writer. So yeah, I was like, well, I'm not going to pay again, like tens of thousands of dollars to just have knowledge about books that totally. I can't apply to anything. So yeah, I just served. I was working at a sushi restaurant back home, and then I moved out here and I worked at Cheesecake Cafe for a year, because it was just the first place that hired me that was by my apartment at the time. And then I got in at this place called Diner Deluxe here. That's like one of the breakfast spots, and I was there for 8 years.
Nice. That's cool. And with the, like you mentioned previously, the drinking aspect, I mean, a lot of that does come into play in regards to, I'm not going to typify everybody's experience, but just the, you know, a more small town, like the Whistler, like that sheer boredom where it's like, what are kids supposed to do? It's like, oh yeah, just obviously drink. And I'm sure, like you said, some of it was, it made your brain feel better and calm down. And then once it got, you know, more overwhelming, where it started to, you know, be detrimental to you. How were you kind of navigating that? Was it basically you started because of pure boredom and then, you know, ended up just being like, oh, this is a good social lubricant?
I think it was just like, that's what everyone did.
Sure.
And like, yeah, as you know, like small town, like anyone, especially from Canada, because like small towns in the States, different than small towns here, unless you live in like Wyoming or something, but like there's nothing here, especially by Whistler. And I don't like going outside. I'm not active. Like there were a lot of people in Whistler that like would come to parties and stuff, but they also like went skiing and stuff like that. I had no interest in anything aside from reading books, and you can only read so much in a day. And then, yeah, it helped with like my social anxiety that I didn't realize I had. But it was just like what you did. I don't know. I also, all my friends were older than me. So there was one friend that like her parents all the kids were teenagers, let them all just drink at home, 'cause then they knew what they were doing. I think I was just like over for dinner and we were playing video games, and my friend was like, do you want one? 'Cause it was just like normal to her. And I was just like, oh, sure. And then had the best time ever, had so much fun. And I was like, this rocks. Right. I want to do this more. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. And you were, like you mentioned, there wasn't shows happening in Whistler. So you had to travel farther distances and take public transit and go do all of that. Once you started to experience more of the, you know, independent minded shows, what did you feel, I guess, a sense of community? Did you feel welcome? Or was it just the simple act of going to a show and seeing these bands that you had only heard of on the internet? That was exciting.
It was really exciting to like make friends that were really interested in the same stuff as me. Like my best friend from high school, she was into, like, she also liked The Used and like Panic at the Disco and like that vibe. And so she'd come to some shows with me, but she didn't really like the like heavier bands. So I didn't really have anyone back home that would like, they would come with me just because it was, oh, fun. We're going to Vancouver. Like, that's exciting. But it was kind of nice to have like my own little group of friends that liked the same stuff as me and could show me new stuff. And I would like make new friends every time I went there. And then Whistler was hard for me to make friends because you know everyone. Like, I knew every single person that went to my school and their siblings' names and where their parents worked. Like, there was not really a lot of room to make new friends unless it was like a new person that moved to town. And normally a new person that's moving to Whistler is like a rich person who either is a pro athlete or their parents just like retired and wanted to move to Whistler, so their kid lives there. So most of the time they weren't really a person that I vibed with very well. Sure. So it's just kind of nice to have like a group of friends that had more in common with me based on interests.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what kind of drew me to like local shows,
sure,
you know?
Sure. Right. It's like there's more people that are into this. Like I think it's so not only as a kid when you feel like you can make your own choices and go see the bands you want to see, but then you see that other people have made that choice and you're like, oh, so there's more out there. Like you kind of sort of know, but it's not until you see them, like you said, in real life and, you know, your local scene, it's like, oh, this is a thing.
Yeah. And yeah, I think now that I'm thinking about it more, I think it was that like I could make a new friend every time. And I had a hard time making friends for sure. Most of my life up until that point. Because if we're talking, I was like 13 when I started going to Vancouver all the time. And up until I was 10, I didn't really have regular friends. So I was just like, oh, this is so cool. Like, people like me. They don't think I'm a fucking weirdo.
Right. Right, totally. Like, I'm not, there's all these positive things that I'm getting out of it in regards to not only enjoying the music and bands and feeling that energy, but then meeting new people that, like you said, you have a common language.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you, I mean, I know that you moved to Calgary when you were about 19 or so, and correct in that time frame.
Yep.
At that point, you were, I presume, just trying to get out of Dodge, so to speak, and be like, all right, I got to, you know, figure out some other place to live because I do not want to be here in Whistler. Vancouver may be a little too expensive. You can get more money out of whatever in Calgary. Had you ever visited Calgary before, or was it just kind of like a, all right, well, that's the next closest biggest city?
No, yeah, I had that year. Actually, I moved to Calgary 11 years ago today.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. It's my Calgary-versary. Yes. I had, so that's 2011. So May 2011, I actually came out here for a whole month just to hang out. And I had come out here a couple times earlier that year for shows. This is hilarious, but Life Ruiner played here.
Oh my gosh. That's a deep cut, but one of a certain era. Yeah.
And I drove here for it.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. with one of my best friends, we drove out for it. And I had, how did I even meet people from out here? The internet.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I came out here. MySpace messages. Yeah, I assume so. Sure. The year before, like fall time, the year before, I came out here to see A Day to Remember and Enter Shikari with some of my friends from Vancouver Island because Enter Shikari was one of their favorite bands and I was just down to do anything. I want to go have fun all the time. So she was like, I want to drive to Calgary to see it. And I was like, yes, let's go. I don't care. That sounds fun as hell. So we like convoyed out here. And I think I met a couple people because I was moshing. So people are like, whoa, girl, that's moshing. So a couple other girls were like, oh, who are you? I don't know you. And I made friends with some people out here. I think that's how I kind of met people here. And then I like came out two or three more times for shows and then like some bands from here played in Vancouver. And I like was there just because I knew that they were coming out. And yeah, I just kind of like made enough friends. And then when did I talk about the things that happened before I moved here on another podcast?
The only thing that I remember you speaking about was the, you know, living in your car and kind of couch surfing and being very transitory in where you were living.
Yes. So that happened and I was living in my car and all my friends in Vancouver were unable to help, which I totally understand. And my friends here were like, we have space, just come here. And I kind of had to figure it out quick because living in a Honda, not the most ideal, even though I had my job at the time was riding for me super hard. They were awesome. They took very good care of me. But yeah, I was like, okay, well, I got to figure this out. And I don't want to be living with five people in a 2-bedroom apartment and working a bajillion jobs in Vancouver. All my friends in Calgary have space and are like, just come here. We will take care of you. Like that's right. Very much the vibe here, no matter what, but we're always down to help anyone out with anything. So I just saved up for a couple months and then came out here and moved in with my friend who like got an apartment just so I would have my own space.
evilgreed.net continues to bring the heat. That is a website that you can visit where they are a fine purveyor of web stores from very specific bands and record labels. They honestly act like a record label in the fact that they have a very specific lens of the type of bands that they work with, and then will provide you, the consumer, a place to purchase that. It makes it very, very easy. Just to give you a little sampling of some of the bands that I'm talking about, they have stores from Power Trip, Sergeant House Records, Russian Circles, Emma Ruth Rundle, some Gulch merch. They have it all. And when I say all, if you are into any of those bands, you will be able to find even more things that you probably should get into. I'm going to be completely straight up and tell you that I found out about one of my new favorite bands, Brutus, through their website. But most importantly, use this promo code 100words. That gets you 10% off your entire order. They're based in Berlin, Germany, but they ship to the United States and it comes very, very fast. That is the reason why they are advertising on this very podcast, because they want to increase their US sales and partnerships from that perspective. So visit evilgreed.net. Buy some merch. You won't regret it. And it'll show up at your doorstep and you'll be like, hey, this is cool. I want to buy more. And then the cycle repeats on and on and on. You get it. Evilgreed.net, promo code 100words. Thank you very much.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I think that really does not only embody the, you know, spirit of punk hardcore, as cliched as that sounds, but it is so interesting when you try to describe to other people these really unique experiences of people. Like, yes, of course, there's different communities, whether it's, you know, church, whether it's like, you know, a bingo group or whatever. But when you're talking about, oh yeah, like I just stay at these strangers' houses as I travel across the world, and people are like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I know that's a little bit more common now with Airbnb or whatever, but
yeah, but even then, that's scary. I feel safer staying with a stranger that like is like a friend of a friend of a friend that goes to hardcore shows. I'd rather stay with them than at some Airbnb.
Totally.
It
sounds insane when you describe it to a person who has no context for this and just be like, what? And then it's like, wait, what do you mean? A friend got an apartment just so you could like crash? Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. It's like,
Who does that for people? Like,
totally. Yeah. I can let you in for a shower occasionally, but there's no way that I'm I'm going to let you just move in here.
He made sure I was set up. It was really cool. I've actually, when I worked at the diner that I was talking about earlier, all of the girls, you had to be like a special kind of crazy to survive there. It was really a really fast paced work environment. So all the girls that were there, kind of like, not like total civilian, but like very normie.
Yeah.
But like kind of weird. So there was two girls that went on vacation to Portland together, and they told me that they were going, like, I don't know, we don't have any plans, we're just going to road trip and like maybe sleep in the car, maybe we'll get, and I was like, okay, you're stressing me out, you are too young and you haven't done this before and I don't feel comfortable with this, so you're staying with my friends. And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, who are they? And it was like three guys. I was like, you're gonna go stay at these with these guys? And they were like really nervous about it, and I was like, I promise you nothing's gonna I know why you're nervous, but like it's gonna be fine. And yeah, they came back just being like, they're the nicest people ever, oh my god, like one of them slept on the couch so we could use his room, they like took us out for coffee every morning, they gave us like a like an activity list every day, like they like hooked them up so hard. And they were just like, I can't believe people like this exist. And I was like, oh honey, people like this exist everywhere. It's just in hardcore though. Like,
totally. Right. Yeah. This welcome to this secret society.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah. Oh, you're a stranger, but you know, my friend,
you're good.
You.
Yeah. You're co-signed. You're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
when you, I know, like you mentioned earlier, you were, you know, straight edge by choice because you ran into a wall where you realized that, you know, drinking was not going to solve your problems and make you feel better for a prolonged period of time. Mm-hmm. Did you, I guess, kind of reach a bottom, so to speak, where it was like, okay, I'm cold turkeying this, straight edge is meaningful to me now? I mean, it was meaningful maybe just as far as a concept was concerned, but mm-hmm. did you reach that kind of bottom spot where you're like, I gotta flip the switch?
I think I just had decided that I didn't want to feel hungover anymore. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna stop like getting drunk. I'm just gonna like enjoy beverages. So I would have like a glass of wine with dinner, or like if I would go out and have like a drink or two with friends, and then I'd wake up the next day crying, like so insanely depressed. And after it happened like 5 or 6 times in a row, I was like, oh, this is only happening after I have a drink the night before. And before, I would just be so violently sick that I didn't realize that I was also sad, and that like this was like causing it, kind of like, because right. yeah, as I said, my brain isn't wired to be happy all the time. So like it was just making that part of my brain worse. But I was always just like violently hungover, so I never really realized that it was also making that part worse. Right. So I was like, okay, well, like now this sucks even more. Like I'm not hungover, but I'm just crazy sad. So I have to kind of, if I was like, oh yeah, like let's split a bottle of wine with dinner. Now I have to be like, is it worth it for me to cry all day tomorrow and like not be able to get out of bed? No. So I was like, there's no point at all anymore. So I just decided to stop drinking. And then I think after like 5 months, I was like, yep, this is better for me. I'm going to make myself stick to this. Yep. So I'm straight edge now.
Right. I love that. And the thing I find interesting specifically about Calgary is that geographically it's isolated. You know, there are so many places that can exist, you know, can incubate a scene, but then there has to be some pulling in from, you know, different towns or what have you. But Calgary has always been this interesting hardcore scene, and it's seemed especially vibrant over the past 5 to 10 years, you know, due in part to a lot of the bands that are existing, obviously Wild Rose existing as a hardcore festival. Mm-hmm. How, and like you said, it was very welcoming when you first moved there. Do you feel that is in part to the fact that you're like, well, we can't rely on anybody else or any, you know, larger cities to kind of, yeah. you know, incubate that. Do you think that that's where it comes from? Or is it just kind of a combination of a bunch of different things that you've noticed?
I think it is very, like 90% of it is just the vibe that's here. I've actually been talking about this a lot the last 2 weeks since the fest, because we had a bunch of Louisville bands here, and some of the guys had been here before and some had never been here. So some of them knew what it was going to be like. And I know that they're already our friends and like they get it and stuff, but the new people are like, they keep at least every couple of days. I get like, I still can't get over how much like fun it was just even hanging out. And that's always kind of been like what brings bands back. Like we all go off and like, I'll get to the why we've got good bands in a second, but like,
take your time.
the shows, we always try to also like ride for bands. So like before, when more tours were coming through here a couple years ago, if there was a tour that was like Edmonton, Calgary, and Lethbridge. So for just, I know no one's going to know how far that is. Edmonton is 3 hours north and Lethbridge is 2 hours south. So if there was a tour that was coming through that hit all of those cities, like 3 carloads of us from Calgary would go to every single show and go off every single night, because we want to make sure that people have fun when they play out here and want to come back, because we know that the drive is abysmal. Like it's just atrocious. And we appreciate so much that people take that time to come here. And even though like as much of us come out as possible and like go off and stuff, it still might not be the biggest amount of money that you're getting off of a door deal that you would get in like Seattle or like other like bigger cities in the States, just because like we don't have as many kids in general that like know what hardcore even is, but like every single one is there. So yeah, we have always made a point to like buy lots of merch, go to every single show, like, and hook it up. Like bands, they come stay with us. My house is your house. Like When I worked at the diner, if the show was on a Saturday, everyone would come in for breakfast on the Sunday, and I would just sneak like 20 people in through the back door and piss off everyone that was waiting for 3 hours for their scrambled eggs and bacon. Right. They would just watch this huge line of like stinky dudes come in the back and take up my whole section. But yeah, we just like make a really big effort to make sure people feel welcome because they are, and make them feel appreciated because they are. And no one here is like too cool for you, kind of thing. Like, if you come play here, we're going to show up, and if you're going to, it feels like home, kind of thing. So, and then, you know, so Caleb, that's an Inclination, for example, like he used to be here all the time, and then he would go tell his friends, like, you have to add Calgary to your roots. Like, Calgary has to be added. Don't just go to Vancouver. Like, we had him and a couple other people that just were so loud about like, make sure you add Calgary to your rooting because it's the best. And then other tourists would come here just because it was like shoved down their throat so much, and then they'd have a good time, and then they'd want to come back, and then they'd tell their friends, and et cetera. So I think that's a huge reason why people want to come play here, is even just to like hang out and
experience it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone thinks that their scene is the best. So I always am concerned that that's what I'm doing, but sure. I've heard it echoed back to me by a lot of people in the last 2 weeks being like, it's, you guys have something special. Like, I hope you know that. And I'm like, no, I know. I'm just happy you also feel it, because I'm not making it up in my head, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that the advantage that you were speaking about, or the advantage / disadvantage of the geographical location, like, it takes effort. Like, I think the fact that not only are you, you know, building a space and a community for bands to be stoked to come there, but just the fact that it takes that effort makes it more, you know, appealing, welcoming, because, you know, I mean, you've played in a bunch of big cities where it's like, oh yeah, the show's cool, but like, it feels different when you're, you know, playing a suburb of this.
Yeah. I mean,
kids just are craving that, you know, interaction with bands.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my favorite, is when you are in a place that you're like, this isn't going to be good. Why, how is this show happening here? And then people come up and know every single word, and you're like, wait, what?
Totally. Totally. Like, yeah. No,
how?
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I think we also work really hard to have good bands, because no one's going to notice us just because we're from Calgary.
Totally.
You know, sure. So everyone that is in a band here works really, really hard, and like works really hard in just like making sure they're really good at playing their instruments. And like, yeah, they put in a lot of effort for that, because also like the vibe can be good, but if every single, like, it kind of is not great when you go play somewhere and you watch four bands in a row that you're like, oh, okay, come on, this sucks. Like,
right. Just put in a little practice time. That's all we ask.
Yeah. Like, I'm happy for you and I'm proud of you for doing it, but like, this could be better. So, but then, you know, if you go somewhere, like when we played in the UK, I hadn't heard of Cauldron before, and they started playing, and I was like, why is this band playing before us? This is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, I couldn't believe it. So when people come play here, and like, not only does like the vibe feel good, but also they're like, oh, I haven't heard of this band before, and that was really good. It's like, it makes them kind of be like, go play there. They also have cool bands. Like, they're good there.
Yep. Totally. And did you, I mean, I know Mortality Rate is like literally your first band, and the, you know, the first activity you had in regards to touring and all of that aspect. Had you wanted to play in a band? I mean, I know that idea maybe was like, oh, that would be cool, but like, I can't play any instruments. You know, that would make sense in a band. Like, you know, I could get up there and play piano or whatever.
Yeah, I can play the piano and the saxophone, but I don't want to be in a ska band. So,
totally. My choices are limited. I guess, had you wanted to be in a band, or was that just kind of like by default because you had friends and then they eventually pulled you into that?
I think I didn't like Mortality's first practice was the first time that I tried screaming. And like, I was never like, I'm going to sit in my car and practice. Like, I never,
right.
You know, I was like, we're going to see what happens. I guess like everyone just believed in me, which made me kind of be like, okay, well, I got to try. But I had toured a couple times before that, just doing merch with friends, just because I was down to chill and I had a serving job, so I could kind of go do whatever I wanted whenever I wanted. So I knew that I liked touring, and I knew that I wanted to like be involved in music in some capacity, like even if it was just being a road dog, like doing merch and chilling and like helping book shows or something. And I had mentioned a couple times, like wanting to be in a band to Cody. And then, yeah, one day we were just driving and he was like, hey, let's start a band. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then we did.
Perfect. Yeah. It was that. Yeah. Just, and especially too, where I think the idea, if a person doesn't have a, you know, obvious musical talent where it's like, oh, I play guitar or I play bass. And then it's just like, well, you can probably try screaming. Cause like, you're kind of like loud and boisterous. Like try that out.
Yeah. Everyone knows I have the loudest laugh on the planet. So he's like, I know you've got volume in you. Let's try that out. And I was just like, yeah, that sounds fun. Okay.
Right. Right. And like you said, you had toured before doing merch and stuff like that. Did you enjoy touring like from the get go? Does it wear on you at all? Like, what's your thought process in regards to touring now that you've done a little bit more?
I love touring as a road dog. If I'm chilling and doing merch and like going to get you guys food and like driving and just like no responsibilities, hey, I'm along for the ride and helping any way I can. Endless time. Love it so much. Playing, I love it and hate it.
Sure.
Because then I'm like a freak about sleeping. Like, I want to see my friends. I'm so happy they want to hang out with me, but like, fuck off. I'm going to bed. Like, the second we're done, the show's done, we're packing up, we're going to the sleep spot, or I'm getting in the back, taking like 10 melatonin, putting an eye mask on, putting earplugs in, don't fucking talk to me till 8 in the morning. Like, because I blow my voice very fast. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to hurt myself. Like, if I'm rested and hydrated, I'm not going to blow my voice out. But God, it's the one night of bad sleep and I just wake up and can't talk anymore.
Right. You're done.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, and I'm a control freak. So I'm like checking stuff constantly. Like, okay, I have to decide what time because I'm a control freak, like I wake everyone up. Like, I don't trust you guys to get up on time. I'm waking everyone up. We've got to leave by this time. Like, I'm making a schedule for every single day. And I get really stressed and just like, control-y about it.
Well, it sounds like you're the band parent.
Yes. Which just makes me like tired too. Like, it just adds, and I know that's just like a me problem. But that also makes me tired. Whereas if it's not my band and I'm just there to hang out, I don't care. I don't care if we're late.
Totally.
You know, like, I'll just make sure you get paid and I'll sell your merch and that's it. That's everything else. I don't care. I don't care where we sleep. I'll sleep in the van. Like, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's situational.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. That makes sense. And the idea of singing, you know, performing, yelling in front of people. And I know that that is a learned process. And your first couple of shows, I'm sure you were, pretty, maybe terrible at it. So when did you, I guess, feel more comfortable doing that and sort of exhibiting yourself like that? Because now, since you've done it for a little bit, that I'm sure you're, you know, better than you once were, what kind of got you over the hump, or was it just this simple repetition of it?
Just repetition. Okay. I don't think I faced the crowd for 2 years. I faced Cody. I would face the drums.
Very compelling live show from a hardcore band.
I'd be losing. I'd be rocking out. I'd be
okay,
like,
good.
Going crazy. I just wouldn't look at the front of the stage.
Sure. No eye contact. No eye contact with people.
Nope. Yep. I don't want to know who's there. Don't look at me.
Sure.
I'm just at band practice right now. That's what I would do. I'll just stare at Cody and just be like, I'm at band practice.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that notion too, that I'm sure you experienced once you started to, like you mentioned, going over to the UK and, you know, playing shows outside of your home area, when people started to, you know, sing along and go off, like, did it, how did that make you feel? Was it just, I mean, obviously there's that rush of like, wow, people are getting what we're doing. And like, this is really interesting and exciting. Was there any, I guess, uncomfortability in regards to attention being paid to you? Because I know that, I mean, especially a vocalist of a band, there are people that all of a sudden, you know, kind of want things from you where it's like, I would like to talk about your lyrics. I would like to, you know, interact with you. And sometimes maybe that is a little much. So I realize there's like 15 questions in there, but
that's okay. I'll try my best to do all of it.
Yeah.
So Mortality is not a sing-along band really. And Europe was the first time that I had like a lot of people singing back at me. Like there were like parts that people knew, basically just like mosh calls, that people knew locally. So like there was like, yeah, but it would be like one or two people like singing along. People would like mosh for us and stuff, but yeah, we never really had people singing along. And then we went over to Europe and it was within 6 months, possibly, I could be wrong, of us putting out You Were the Gasoline. So like it was still fairly new. And I think the only song that people really knew here was Roses, which is about Evan. Mm-hmm. And so people were singing along to that, like at the fest and stuff, but at local, like people would sing along at the fest, but at local shows, we didn't really get much of it, but that's just how it was. So I didn't really mind. And then we were in Europe and I had like, we were in some small town in Germany, like a village in Germany. And there was like 15 people that knew every single word to every single song and were like losing it over Roses at me. And I like started crying and I looked at Cody and he's like trying to wipe his eye and drum at the same time behind me. Cause he just looked up and saw the people like climbing on each other to sing that song specifically. And yeah, I was just like, this is surreal right now because that's never really been like the kind of band that we are.
Sure.
So that was like, yeah, I don't know, that made me feel, especially cause it was like that release and that song, like, sometimes, especially if I'm having a bad mental day or whatever, and I'm singing a song that's about dark things, I see someone singing it back at me. I'm like, this is for me, not you. Like,
totally.
No, go away. You know, like,
right.
But yeah, just like people like being excited about a song about Evan. I was like, ah, this is crazy. And what was the second part of that?
I was just saying.
Oh, people paying attention to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like it.
Okay.
Yep. It depends on my mood, but yeah, sometimes people like will message us just being like, hey, like this got me, your music helps me or whatever. I'm like, oh no, are you okay? That's bad. If sure. You're relating to these songs, I'm worried for you. Like, are you good? And yeah, sometimes people, yeah, kind of want me, I like, people don't know my real name. I'm very private on the internet. So sometimes if there are people that kind of expect me to be like available and like they ask me things and I'm like, that's not for you to know. But I just tell them, I'm not telling you that, you're a stranger. And they're like, oh yeah, okay. Like they kind of get it immediately.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't really like people paying attention to me, which is funny because I get on a stage and scream at the top of my lungs. But
right, right. Well, there's the personal, you know, boundaries that you can create for yourself, and then there's also that on the, I guess, on the outside of those boundaries is the art that you put out there, because once you put it out there, like it's not yours anymore, and then there's that, you know, kind of balance that you try to strike where it's like I'm going to express myself, but. How much do I let out, you know?
And yeah.
Like, you only like, know after you put it out there.
Yeah, like I know what these songs are about. And
right.
But like, and if you can read between the lines and you can like get what I'm saying, like good for you. And if people ask me, is this about this? I'll be like, yep. Or no, that's not at all, you know? But yeah, people like ask me to explain something to them. I'm like, no, that's okay. I already, you know enough.
Right. Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. I've been there, done that. Right.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to hit on was the idea that, I mean, both hardcore is at such an interesting spot, not only now, but, you know, over the past, whatever, we could say 5 to 10 years, that there is more attention that is paid to this genre as a whole than, you know, what it was that many years ago. And the notion of, you know, bands becoming, you know, touring entities and business aspects and managers and booking agents and all that stuff. I mean, that's something that bands have had to obviously wrestle with since the early 2000s. How does it sit with you guys where not only Mortality Rate, but, you know, World of Pleasure, like, I just find it so interesting because it's obviously just, you know, you and one other person, like you're not even a real band, quote unquote, but like,
Yep.
But then the fact that I'm sure people are hitting you up being like, hey, do you guys want a manager? And like, you know, how do you, I guess, kind of treat all of the sort of business side of things with both bands? Or do you just kind of keep that at a distance and just say yes to the things you want to say yes to?
Yeah, we're actually talking about this on Twitter today. Me and Colter are atrocious with the business side of World of Pleasure, but the whole point of that band is to have fun. Also, we have a full band now.
That's good. Now you're a real band. That's good. I'm just kidding.
Yes, we're a full band now, but it's still like they just got to show up and play. They don't have any responsibility. There's no pressure on them. They don't have, like, obviously if it's something that is going to be like a published thing, or like if it's, I'll make sure everyone's available or comfortable with it or whatever. But yeah, they just got to rock. That's it. It's like our brain baby. And the whole point of that band is to have fun. So, yeah, today I didn't know that, Colter had talked to someone about doing an interview for something. I don't know. I just saw an email and I was like, what the hell is this? And opened it and it had like, that said like press package in it and had the word deadline in it and interview in it. And I was like, oh God, this is terrible. What the fuck? And just like texted him and I was like, what is this? Like, this is the most anxiety inducing thing I've ever seen. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I've got it handled. All I need is for you to send this one picture. And I was like, ah, like panicking. And then, yeah, we were talking about it on Twitter today, like how hilariously bad we are because we both just like see that stuff and get overwhelmed to go, never mind. Yeah, no, I don't want to do that anymore. Never mind. No, that's too much. That's too much. I don't like it. But yeah, the whole point of it's just for fun. And we're not like, we didn't even know if we were ever going to play a show when we released it. We just like wrote music for fun for ourselves and then, you know, spent money and time on it. So we're just putting it on the internet and people liked it. For Retaliate, try to be better about like being more professional about it, but we tried to branch out into like little things here and there with help, getting kind of like external help, and I just didn't like it. I'm a control freak. It's better if I just do it. Mm-hmm. Or if like we just do it, I'm like, hey, so I can't handle this thing, can you guys handle this thing for me? I prefer it that way. And yeah, I'm especially being a girl in a band. Sometimes there's like certain audiences that I'm not trying to be available to.
Right.
That, you know?
Well, and that is a very, I mean, that's a thoughtful response, but it does when you, I mean, there, I think
you understand what I was saying.
No, I do. And it's just, I mean, that like shakes a thought loose in regards to, cause I mean, you know, Nirvana was at the epicenter of this where it's like, you know, they became the largest band in the world when that was clear. I mean, they wanted to be big, but not as big as they became. And then, you know, just the idea that you can't control the people that get into your art.
Yes.
But the thing to your point of what you can control is like where you put yourself and like the opportunities that you take. And so there can be a little bit of a mitigation with that. And so I see what you're saying where it's like, oh yes, we're not going to say yes to this, even though theoretically it could make us, you know, bigger. We're playing in front of more people or whatever. But like, I don't necessarily know if those are the people, and that sounds pretty snobbish and elitist, but that's, I know that's not what you were saying.
No, it's dudes that say inappropriate things. That's the crowd that I'm trying to not be in front of.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
The specific, for anyone who, yeah, is listening to this and wants to make a comment about that, it's just gross dudes that I'm trying to not be in front of. So yeah, it's better for us to just like do stuff that sounds fun. And I don't like, none of us kind of are in a position or have a desire to be like a full, we want a tour, but not like 10 months of the year.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're down to grind, but we also want to like have a job. So then it's kind of better to make sure that it's always something that's like fun and exciting and feels good for everyone. And yeah, our European tour was like, every show was like a cool, like little DIY show that was like done by like straight up hardcore kids. And it was awesome. The only person that I had a problem with was someone who worked at one of the bars. Wasn't someone that was attending. And we had the best time ever. And like, I'd rather do that over and over and over again than do a tour that has an audience that like doesn't really line up or care about like the quote unquote political, because respecting people shouldn't be a political thing, but like the political side of things, and like feeling uncomfortable for just existing, you know? So I kind of just, I'd rather, we try to be more professional, but I'm not trying to have like a manager or anything, because I'm very controlling. It would be me bossing that. Like, I would just be bossing them around. Like, you're not allowed to make any decisions for us. I am making them all, kind of thing. So there's no point.
Yeah, no, for sure. I appreciate the description of that. Yeah. Well, Jess, thank you so much for letting me ping pong around your brain, and I appreciate you doing this. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I hope that I actually answered any of your questions instead of rambling for no reason.
Fun times indeed. I genuinely appreciate Jess coming on the show, because she didn't need to. She could have just said no. And I know everybody has the opportunity to do that. But I always appreciate people that are willing to spend time with me and then in turn you as a listener. So shout out to Jess. Please check out her bands. I will link them in the show notes as I usually do. So check them out there. Next week, I have a real head, and his name is Jonah Bayer. And what makes him a real head? Not only has he played in a bunch of cool bands, but he plays in United Nations with Jeff Rickley. He does a cool podcast called How Did We Get Weird with his sister, Vanessa Bayer. He's an old Cleveland head, has paid attention to music for quite some time within the punk and hardcore world, covered it for many, many years working at Alternative Press. He also worked at Fuse for Steven's Untitled Rock Show, which was a very seminal program in the early 2000s, maybe even mid 2000s. But Jonah's just a good dude, and the opportunity came up to speak to him, so I jumped at it. That's what we got next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.